Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Willie P and John Fricke here with you on a Sunday afternoon now. As we come past the noon hour, hope you're enjoying yourself. You saw Tony Fernandez passed away at the age of 57 from kidney disease. The old Blue Jays, Indians shortstop. So sad.
Great. He was a great player in his day.
Yeah. Had that big home run in the 97 ALCS against the Baltimore Orioles that propelled Cleveland to the 97 pennant, where they ended up losing to the then Florida Marlins.
Which iteration? That was Gary Sheffield. No. Was that Gary? Yes, it was. Yes. It was Gary Sheffield, Kevin Brown, who ended up going to the Padres the next year and going to the World Series. Right.
Yeah. The Edgar Renteria hit that in Game 7. That was one of those series that was great Game 7, bad series. Like, very irrelevant series, just because you had two teams that really didn't have a national following, and the games weren't that good. But you had a pretty classic Game 7 in that one. Someone says to you on the text line, don't overlook the Phillies this year. They have the talent and a real manager now. And also, why is John so testy this morning, very sensitive about the Braves? I don't think you're testy or sensitive about the Braves. I just think you have more of an optimistic feel than most people do. And again, it's these people who you are buying in on the hope. I want to see the deck stacked a little bit more, but I also, like you, do not believe that Alex is done, which gives me some comfort a little bit, although not much.
Well, my point is I didn't think I was being testy, but apparently I'm coming across that way. Keeper of the Kool-Aid, driver of the bandwagon. I have full faith and credit in Alex Anthopoulos. I have full faith and credit in the Braves. Again, Ronald Acuña is going to be better this year than he was last year, and better the year after that. He's growing up into the role. Ozzie Albies is going to be an even better player. Do I think that Ronald Acuña could be the MVP of the National League? Hell yes. Do I think Mike Soroka could be a Cy Young winner? Yes. I mean, again, these players are getting better.
And I think both those categories are now wide open.
We're still on the – we are on – the Dansby Swanson is getting better. We're still on the roller coaster ride up with these guys. Freddie Freeman hasn't quite crested the hill either. He's still on the upslope of his career. Now, granted, he's getting towards that top, but he's not on the downside of his career. You know, he's just not. And we haven't even seen the Christian Pache or – now – we have to see something. It is high time that Kyle Wright does something, or you got to move on.
Bryce Wilson does
something, or move on.
Right.
You know.
And I think, like I said before, the Cole Hamels injury is a blessing in disguise for that agenda part, I would say. And because of that, you might actually get a chance to see just exactly what you have in those two guys and whether or not there's some value to be had in them. 404-741-0929. We were talking a little bit before the break about the Astros, and Casey in Riverdale wants to chime in on that, and he joins us here on Sports Radio 99 The Game. Hello, Casey.
Yes, how you doing?
What's up, Ben?
Man, I just got a problem with the way everybody's jumping on the Houston Astros. I know they deserve to be scrutinized for what they did, but I don't remember New England Patriots when they cheated against the Rams and they got their team film. The air, the balls, and all this other stuff. I don't remember anybody coming down on them saying the players need to get on TV or the radio and apologize and jumping all over them. It's like, well, we said a few things, and, we're going to let that go. No, they cheated and won. They should have gave that Super Bowl back just like everybody's talking about. The Astros need to do what they did and give it back. But making the players have to apologize, nobody said anything about making Tom Brady or Belichick. Only those folks apologize for what they did.
I don't think that Spygate gets as much because that was more of an institutional thing done by the team. I think the reason why this is more of a topic that people have a problem with is because this given from what the investigation said, a lot of this was player-driven. I think that's why.
The players in New England knew. They knew.
Oh, yeah.
Because they watched the film, they watched the footage, they knew when Ty Law was playing, I forgot who he was checking, he knew his moves. They knew when they was in certain formations what was going to happen. The players didn't set it up, but they were in on it. Come on, man. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the Patriots did apologize for whatever that's worth.
And I do think they got a summarial. They got very much. They were chastised. It wasn't like they weren't chastised.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Deflategate went. I mean, that was a pretty big thing.
That was a pretty big thing.
It was a pretty big thing, and it will always kind of somewhat define Tom Brady. But again, here with this, the Astros, I think, is still far worse. In my opinion, this is the biggest scandal to hit major American sports since SMU was banned from playing football back in 1982.
True.
And it's so bad. And Rob Manfred has messed this up so badly that it will never leave him. There was a story yesterday that two California Little Leagues have banned the use of the term Astros for the teams. They can't use Astros in the league.
Right.
So nobody can be named the Astros. And, you know, at first glance you're going, oh, that's just ridiculous. It's over the top. And I thought about it for a moment, and I said, you know, how do you like to be a 12-year-old kid and having to go out there in an Astros uniform with all the other kids going, cheaters, cheaters, cheaters? I mean, the Astros are never going to get away from this.
Right.
And if the Braves aren't going to be in the World Series, who does not want to see the Astros and Dodgers in the World Series this year?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, not only that, who doesn't want to see the Yankees get another shot at them in the postseason?
In the postseason,
as well?
Right.
And as somebody who grew up hating the New York Yankees, I wouldn't. That's a terrible part of it, is that this has made the Yankees look like the moral high ground, which is hurtful for somebody like me who grew up hating the Yankees. Number one, and number two, I'm wondering if this isn't a good thing for baseball, or at least in places that have baseball in their cities, especially American League cities, because I think this creates a natural villain, which I think has been missing from baseball for quite some time, since the glory days of the New York Yankees and such, because now you have somebody who literally everybody hates. And the other thing I don't like, too, is that it seems like in Houston, and again, I don't think that we would do the same thing if it happened here, but in Houston, they really seem to be carrying the water for the team. I think a lot of it because they want access, but a lot of these outlets that I've seen, people I used to follow and know from my time having lived there, they're all trying to start kind of carrying their water a little bit, and I find that a little off-putting. I don't think we would have done that here. I think we would have taken them to task.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's understandable to some degree, and because I think they're also bracing in Houston for the fact this is going to be a brutal season.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere they go. Now, they don't play the Dodgers because they just didn't get an interleague crossover, but they do play the Yankees.
Not until September, though.
Right.
At least up there.
Right. But you think it's going to be forgotten by the time they get there?
No, no.
Okay. They are playing the Angels out in Orange County, and the Dodgers fans are already planning to flood the stadium that day to go after the Astros. No, they're never going to be whenever Altuve and Bregman, they will never live this down. And then when Correa said that statement that we've been playing this morning, when Correa talked about Altuve,
the unfinished tattoo.
Oh, my God.
What a load of crap that is.
Of course it's a load of crap. All of this is a load of crap. It's a load of crap that A.J. Hinch wasn't banned for life. It's a load of crap that Beltran and Cora haven't been banned for life. If John Coppolella is banned for life, then those guys ought to be banned for life. And frankly, some of the players should be banned for a year or more.
I don't think that – I mean, I think that there's still a pending there's still pending legislation that – is yet to come on Beltran and Cora. So I think they still can basically sit on an act. Like they basically still can get banned for life. That still can't happen.
I mean, it's an unofficial ban for life because, understand, nobody in baseball is going to hire any of those three guys ever again. They'll never work in the game again.
I think Hinch will. I think Hinch, while he was the manager, he seems detached enough from it that
you were in charge. What do you mean detached? You...
Again, I'm not.
How are you detached?
Again, if you believe everything that you think from that,
I don't believe anything of it.
Of course, again, that's all open to interpretation. But again, I think if you believe what's in that investigation, Hinch apparently tried to curb it. But again, you have to kind of fall on the sword.
He tried to curb
it.
Wait a second, you're the manager. Wait, walk this through. I'm the manager. Tried to curb it, or just said, "Hey, stop."
I also don't know if the manager in this day and age has as much power as say, managers in the old in old baseball time did.
Well, if it really bothers you and you think it's really that thing, then you go up to your general manager and say, we need to stop this. And if the general manager doesn't stop it, you go to the owner and say, we need to stop that. And if the owner, Jim Crane, isn't going to stop it, you need to get up there and resign. And they say, why did you resign? I'm not going to talk about why I resigned. But and now after the fact, you go, I resigned because they refused to stop it.
Mm. Ken is in Buckhead. Ken, you're on Sports Radio 99 The Game. How are you, pal?
I'm doing pretty good, man. To harp on what you was just talking about Houston's manager, you must be related to him or something.
Me? No.
The reason I say that, I mean, come on, dude, he's a manager. Of course he could put a stop to it. Say, guys, enough. Enough of this crap. I mean, we're not good enough to win the title. We're just not good enough to win it, but we're not going to cheat our way to a World Series. I mean, show some integrity. But getting back to the caller before me, talking about the cheatiots is who I call them. They're the cheatiots and Bill Belichick. I just want to say this. That should have been played up just like this is in Major League Baseball, simply because you got a week of tape, a week before the Super Bowl against the St. Louis Rams. You know the formations. You know the plays. Tell me that that's not a great advantage. And that's why the game was close. I knew something was going on because St. Louis was far better than New England that year with the greatest show on turf. I mean, I knew something was up. And everybody want to give Belichick, he's the greatest coach of all time, this crap. Come on, he's the greatest cheater of all time, in my opinion. But, guys, have a great day.
Appreciate it, Ken.
That's why I call him Belichick, the Cheatriots. And now we have the Cheatros, the Disastros.
No, the Houston Asterisks.
The Asterisks.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It's not that I have a particular affinity for A.J. Hinch. It's just that I don't really respect the position of manager in 2020 in Major League Baseball, because I think, again, a lot of those decisions are coming from up top, and it's basically, you know, you either fall in line or
you
die.
Here's where we disagree. I can't – my problem with the Patriots stuff is I can't prove Brady knew any of this or,
right.
You know, or even – I have no idea who knew what and when, okay?
Right.
With the Astros, everybody knew what, when.
Right.
And it took Mike Fiers to go out there and be a snitch to some people in baseball.
Right.
To break this loose. And everybody knew. Even Brian McCann's out there going, oh, my God.
We got Braves baseball a week from today. We've got Atlanta United soccer for the first time on Tuesday. They take on Motagua. Jason Longshore had a chance to talk with me earlier about what's going on with United going into that game in Honduras, and also big updates on two major injuries from that team. We'll talk about that coming up next when he joins me on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Our Atlanta United play here.
Jalvi into the box for Martinez. They score!
If it matters to a United fan, hear it first, even on the weekend.
Your weekend plays here.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Willie P, John Fricke here with you on a Sunday on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Yesterday I was on and had a chance to catch up with Atlanta United soccer analyst Jason Longshore as the Five Stripes get ready to take on FC Motagua in the opening leg of the CONCACAF Champions League coming up on Tuesday in Honduras. Atlanta United might be short-handed with no Mateus Hoceto and a pair of starters that are possibly injured, George Bello and Miles Robinson. I asked Jason the latest on those two preseason injuries.
Nothing on both, which makes you think you're not going to see them on Tuesday, although that has not been officially said yet. Bello, all signs indicate concussion. After the injury, Frank DeBoer talked about a hit to the back of the head. That would have been when he hit the ground. There wasn't any head-to-head contact. And Bello himself tweeted that, you know, the worst of it that they thought initially was not the case. So you have to think concussion, but you know how it is with concussions. You never know how long that can be. It's kind of a day-to-day kind of thing. Miles Robinson, he got back into town with the team Thursday. So the first day he would have been checked out at the training facility would have been yesterday. So without any updates on him, it's really unknown what his status will be.
Of course, we know, according to what Frank DeBoer said to SiriusXM Radio, that Mateus Hoceto will not be available for Tuesday's opening leg of the CONCACAF Champions League against Motagua. Work visas being the culprit there. How long do you think this could be an issue for them?
It's impossible to know. And work visas have been an issue for quite a few teams this season. The process is just taking longer than it typically does. Jake Mulroney should be good for this match on Tuesday. Fernando Meza is back. He played on Tuesday this week. You never know. I mean, if you get lucky, maybe Hasetu is available because if he getting his paperwork on Monday, fingers crossed, but not likely.
I've heard this not just here, but all across the MLS. What seems to be the reason? Is this just a log jam, or is this a government thing, or something more suitable for a larger issue?
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't know if it's just a slowdown with the process in general. Chicharito was struggling with it to get his visa, even to a point where he could participate in training sessions. So I don't know with some of the guys if it's, and Hosetu and Mulroney could be in a situation where it's about traveling in and out of the country if it's that stage of it. So it's been more complicated this time around than typically, which has been strange because the green card process has moved along really fast for a lot of teams in the league in the past year. The visa process seems to be the hang-up.
Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst, joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So we've gotten to see a little bit of a sample size. That game this past week against Leones Negros was, I think, the stiffest competition that they had seen. What stood out to you for the most part when you saw this team kind of get a step up in competition?
I think the defense is something that stood out to me, and it's not really a surprise because Frank DeBoer has been a guy who wanted to organize the defense first and build from there. He did it last year actually to good effect, and this year I think it's going to be the same kind of thing. And when you have the loss of Leandro Gonzalez Pires and you're incorporating Fernando Meza, that's, you know, kind of an obvious place to start. Meza has really stood out to me. George Campbell, who is a homegrown signing, first professional contract taking effect for this season. He played with Atlanta United, too, on an academy contract last year. Campbell shows that he's further along than maybe any of us anticipated coming into the year. And if Miles Robinson isn't available, George Campbell might be a player who steps into that. Anton Walkes has shown well in preseason, both as a left wing back and as a center back in the second half against Leones Negros. Franco Escobar has been the Franco Escobar that, you know, we come to expect here in Atlanta, with a lot of runs forward impacting the game on that end, but also stout defending as well.
Was this team plotting too much for you? Like, it seemed a little sluggish. I know a lot of that might be due to the altitude, and a lot of that had to do maybe with the turnaround, but it seemed to me that getting the ball from the back line of the attacking third, just it didn't have the same crispness that we were trying to see or that we've been used to seeing with Atlanta United.
Yeah, I think what it is, the altitude and the tired legs definitely factored in. But, you know, when you're not feeling 100%, what do you usually start doing? Overthinking it. And when you're trying to, I think, create new patterns, and you've got new players helping to create those patterns. Brooks Lennon plays the right wing back role differently than Julian Gressel. Mentioned Meza, mentioned Campbell. You know, the central midfield duo has kind of moved around a little bit. We've seen Heinemann and Remedy in there. We've seen Heinemann and Larinowitz in there. And I think you're still building that. And when you're building it and you're not 100% physically, you're going to be thinking through too much. It felt like every pass there was an extra second or two of thought behind it rather than just playing and moving on instinct. Now, the last 15 minutes was interesting to me because that was definitely where the tired legs were having an effect, but it's also where Atlanta had maybe some of its best attacking play, because you kind of got through it and you were just, you know, playing through Pitti Martinez, who was dropping in deeper and reading the game really well and creating some opportunities for Joseph up top.
Talking with Jason Longshore, Atlanta United soccer analyst here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Atlanta takes on Motagua, opening leg of the CONCACAF Champions League, coming up here on Tuesday. You'll hear it on 92.9 The Game with pregame coverage beginning at 9:30 for a 10 p.m. kickoff from Honduras. My biggest question to you before the season was what needed to change tactically for Atlanta United, and you said their versatility needed really to show out. How much of that have you seen through the preseason?
A little, and I kind of expected it would be a process because you have to have a base to start from, and it appears that this team is going to be based out of playing three center backs, playing two playmakers in Ezequiel Barco and Pitti Martinez, which is a really bold way of playing. Most teams don't have the mentality to do that. Most teams will play with one playmaker. A lot of teams actually play with none and try to create from out wide. Whereas Frank DeBoer is opting to play both Barco and Pitti in comfortable central roles for them. So you have to build around that to make it work. And I think what we're starting to see is the second half in Birmingham, second half against Leonis Negros, where they shifted to four in the back and they shifted to something that looked more like a 4-3-3, although it wasn't traditional because Barco and Pitti were still very free. And it opened things up in some ways. I thought it in Birmingham, it wasn't quite as effective. In Mexico, it was more effective. I'll be curious to see, once you start getting into more games and the team finds an increased comfort level, how much they change their shape in a match. Mm-hmm. Because if they're comfortable changing their shape and moving the pieces around a little bit, other teams in MLS don't typically do that very often. And they're going to struggle with defending against it. So if Atlanta can get comfortable in being a team that can sometimes play, you know, with wide play with Brooks Lennon stepping up high down the right side and sometimes playing strictly through the middle, overloading certain parts of the field, they're going to be tough to defend.
I have a player in mind, but I want to ask you, who do you have to see more from?
Could be Lennon. I think some of it is he's being asked to do some different things here in Atlanta than he has been asked to do at Real Salt Lake. You know, I think the game that Frank DeBoer is trying to create with this team is a thinking man's game. You know, you have to read the game well, and you have to read what the opponent is giving you and maybe what the opponent does well, too, that you have to defend a little more against. And Lennon's not in a very traditional right-back role where, you know, the role's very defined, and he gets forward when he can, but he's defending in a line of four, and it's pretty simple. It's about executing. Here he's got to read the game, and he's got to know when to go and when to sit and sometimes when to pinch in and when to cover for Franco Escobar when he steps forward. So it's been a little bit of watching Brooks Lennon, and I think you can see the thought going through about how to play as opposed to feeling 100% comfortable in playing. And I think it's just going to take a little time for him.
So the guy I had was Hyndman, because I almost feel like he mm-hmm. you mentioned the fact that this team was thinking a lot. I think that's somebody who's personified that a lot, because I see him thinking and not acting as instinctively, at least throughout the preseason, as I've come to see him over the last season plus.
Yeah, that central midfield is going to be really interesting, because with Hosetu, with Hyndman, with Eric Rometty, with Jeff Larinowicz, with Mo Adams, you've got players who play the same kind of role but have very different spins on it. And Hyndman is maybe the one who can play all facets of a central midfielder. He can step up and be an attack-minded player. He can be a box-to-box player and give you a little everything. I think he's a player who can sit deeper as well. And he did that during his time at Fulham and at Rangers in Scotland. Can he be that guy to partner with a Matteo Susetto, who's a player who wants to step forward more? Maybe so, but I'm with you. It's got to be better than it was in Mexico.
Certainly so. One more for you, Jason. Just a scouting report. What are you expecting to see with this Motagua group? How do they match up with Atlanta United? Where can they take advantage, at least in this opening leg? I know that if you're going on the road down there, you're expecting, hey, get out of there with a draw and then hope you can finish up business there at in Kennesaw.
And that's the key, is you've got to manage the match down in Honduras, because it's going to be difficult. I mean, this is a team that's incredibly motivated. This is a team that has CONCACAF Champions League experience. They expect to be in these kinds of matches. What I look at with them that worries me is their attack. They just brought back their all-time leading scorer, Rubilio Castillo. He's with a club in Portugal, didn't really click with them, wasn't playing much. They've loaned him back. He's played a couple of matches since coming back. But he's a player with 86 league goals for Motagua, their all-time leading scorer. They've also added a veteran Argentine forward in Gonzalo Klusener, who's 36, but a kind of a big target player that can make life difficult for the back line. Where I think Atlanta can take advantage of them is they're not exactly a pacey team. They don't have a lot of team speed. And the little bit I've seen of them, when teams press them, their back line is not comfortable with the ball at their feet. And if you can get them into a point where they're just playing it long and you win the 1v1 battles that you should, you'll be able to counterattack and get at them pretty quick. And I also think with the press, you might be able to cause some turnovers and some quick opportunities.
That is Jason Longshore, who joined me yesterday on my show. Willie P here with you alongside John Fricke, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We'll come back. Get into some Falcons. You might have to make a bit of a Sophie's choice when it comes to Falcons offseason when it comes to these particular two players. And I'll get into that with John when we come back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Download the Radio.com app and take us with you wherever you go.
Just go. Catch up on the latest Atlanta sports, no matter where you are. If Atlanta sports matter to you,
get the Radio.com app and never miss a thing.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Willie P, John Fricke here with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, radio.com app. You said you had a question for me, John Fricke.
I have a question for you and for the parents out there. If you have a child who plays Little League baseball or Little League softball, and I know that there are teams out there nicknamed the Astros. We mentioned earlier that there are two California Little Leagues that have banned the nickname Astros, which sounds like it's petty on its surface, but it makes some sense because you don't really want, I don't have a son, but if I had had a son, I have a daughter, and he was, say, 12 years old and he was playing on a team named the Astros, I would be with the other parents and the coach and my Little League team and saying, we need to change the nickname. And I don't want my son out there, not because, but because of the potential for other parents and other players to be cheaters. I mean, to give you a bunch of crap over the fact of something you had nothing to do with. Plus, I think it's such a villainous name right now. I just don't want anything to do with it. So let me ask a question. Are there any parents in our audience right now, any parents out there, and I'll take you at your word. We'll take you at your word at 404-741-0929. I just tweeted it. Are there any parents in our audience? Do you have a kid playing for a team called the Astros? And if so, do you want the team to change its nickname? I'm just curious out there. I'll take it your word that you do have a kid that's playing for a team called the Astros. And then if you don't or do, I get it. I would want to change the name, Willie.
I think we're getting too far. That's a little too far for me. And again, I see what you're saying, but I don't know if people are really going to take that extra step to equate anything the Astros on the pro level did versus, you know, that. Like, I could see it more.
You think that Little League parents.
I don't.
I guess you don't have any kids.
No, I don't. I don't.
Okay, you haven't been down that road yet.
But I remember.
Trust me, when you get down that road, Willie, because my daughter played competitive high-level soccer. These parents are intense, and they come at you for anything you can. I mean, it's.
I just don't know if I understand pettiness when it comes to those things. I've noticed, and you know, when it comes to doing things like, you know, I used to do games when it came to like doing Little League games as a broadcaster. And so I notice it and things of that nature. So it's not as if I haven't been exposed to that type of level. And my sister played travel soccer for the longest time and she's a little bit younger than me. So like I got to see it from a more mature level than having played it. So like, again, you see those things become as intense as all get out.
See the first reply?
That's an incredibly extraordinary. I see it from CAAWTN. He says, if it was me, I'd want the name changed just for the kids. That's all. That's a far leap, man.
Danny Musgrove says, I wouldn't want my grandson to have that name on his uniform. I think the Astros moniker will be akin to the Black Sox moniker for generations to come. See, this is we are talking about how we view this slightly differently, which is fine,
yes.
Willie. And I'm glad you're taking the position that it's not. I think this is potentially the worst scandal in the history of American sports. It's that
Even more than the Black Sox scandal?
Even more, because it's essentially the same thing. At least Shoeless Joe Jackson was innocent, and it happened in 1919.
Right.
Okay, so when it
out
was...
out of sight, out of mind. I understand.
Well, yeah, and you know, far less important in a lot of ways. It was basically, you know, while it was Major League Baseball, these guys had to have jobs on the side because you didn't make enough money.
Right.
And so that's one of the reasons.
Imagine
if
something like that happened this day and age.
Oh, well, I know. I mean, and there will be other scandals. And this is, in my estimation, this is so bad. And Rob Manfred, we talked about it earlier, has botched this so much. I think that Beltran and Cora and Hinch and all of those guys should be banned for life. I think you can make a case if you're throwing Donald Sterling out as an owner. You can make a case of forcing or Marge Schott. You threw Marge Schott out. You could throw Jim Crane, the owner, out over this. That's how bad it is, in my estimation.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that regard. I just think going to the level of Little League parents wanting the name changed because of that. Like I could, I don't want to get into a situation where we're talking about the Native American names, but like I could see parents not wanting to have like say Redskins as like if we're talking like Pop Warner football, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't think they. Well, didn't we have all these name changes, Indians and Redskins all over the country here in high school?
Yes, I'm sorry.
I mean Braves and they're dropping all of them, which is you know I mean
I find that being to be more offensive than say what the Astros are right now.
I want to say this because I lived in Los Angeles, and a lot of the teams that are changing their names and are in the Southern California area, in the little leagues in Los Angeles, they still have teams called the Giants. I think we've seen over the past couple of years the volatility of the Giants, Dodgers that have sent
with
fans,
to
very dark places.
Yes,
and that's not an issue for the parents. So I understand why they're doing this. I think it's a bit much, though. I don't think the fans are going to get any more out of line
again,
than they would facing
you guys
the
have
Giants.
To under, you, but you need to here's where Abe and Will, you need to check yourself. You don't have kids.
I understand.
Okay? And when you do get to that kids point, let me tell you how it changes.
Mm-hmm.
Once you guys have children of your own, and I'm not pulling a card on you. I'm just saying that you really see what it's like and how awful the parents and other teams can be. And not that your parents and your team can't be that kind of awful towards mm-hmm. somebody else, but how bad and ugly 12 and 13 year old girl soccer can be.
Mm-hmm.
It could be pretty ugly.
We have, of course, a lot of responses on Twitter at 929 the game at John Fricke and at Willie P Style. Shannon says, "I do not have kids playing, but I disagree with the changing the team name because of what one team did. No one changed the team name from the Patriots or the Aints after their fiascos."
Again, I think I see what Shannon's saying. I think this is 100 times worse, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what the Patriots did was awful. I think what the Bounty Gate with the Saints was terrible. And yet I still think this is – I really think this is so next level.
Right.
As to be
– I'm not minimizing what they did
10
at all.
Times worse.
I'm not trying to minimize what they did. I'm just saying that's a pretty far leap to basically equate what they did – and just the fact that their name is on a little league jersey, that's going to cause some sort of animosity. That and again, I'm not saying that people can't be that petty and that vindictive.
Yes, they can. And wait till you have a kid. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong out there. You know, tell me I'm wrong.
Steve is in Woodstock. He wants to chime in on this. And Steve, you're on 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, a couple of things. First and foremost, one of the things I haven't heard about this whole Astros thing is the gambling aspect.
Oh yeah!
All of those games that were bet on are tainted.
Very
true.
I mean,
my God, millions and tens of millions of dollars on the weekly games and the World Series. Second thing is, I have kids in competitive sports right now, and I coach. Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to be associated with that anymore. I mean, this is huge.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just said. That if my kid was playing baseball right now, or my daughter was playing softball and she played for the Astros, I would be talking to the other parents. We need to change her name.
Mm. Again, I understand it needs to be more about the individuals than the team. I mean, I know the individuals are part of the team, but I mean, I think it's more about these individuals' names being sullied more than the team. Because again, the team will recover from this, just like the White Sox did, just like the Reds did, and just like, you know, all these other teams that have had these scandals that have happened over the course of time, they all recover. I just don't know if the Astros name is going to be permanently sullied by this particular scandal. I think, again,
I think it will be, because this will never be forgotten. Never.
I feel like
you think SMU, that we still don't associate that, right or wrong?
We still do.
Yeah.
Certainly still
40
do.
Years later. 40.
Willie P, John Fricke here with you, Sports Radio 99 The Game. You mentioned something about you having a daughter. I found this story rather interesting, and I tried to throw it past Paul Crane yesterday. We'll see what John has to do with it here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.